What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up, everybody? Yeah, I guess I should get my microphone, right? You probably want to hear this, right? What's up? These nighttime lives are really something. Kids are not in bed. Stuff's happening. People are running around, but we're here. And it was a day today. It was really a day. A lot of stuff happened. We're going to talk about so much. I don't know how we're going to do it in an hour as per usual, but we are going to talk through some cell phone evidence that I thought was really strong for the prosecutor. We'll talk about a couple of the friend witnesses of Paul that I just was like, it was excruciatingly hard to get through. When you see dudes like that, that are probably some tough guys, you know, hunting guys, fishing guys, get up there, voices cracking, obviously brutal for them. This is like a second family to them. That was tough. We're going to go through their testimony. We're going to talk about what they did that helped the prosecution, what they did that helped the defense. They both seemed incredibly honest to me, down the middle, not trying to help or hurt either side. But just telling the truth sometimes can really be a big part of the case. And it can be really beneficial to one side and really beneficial to another all-in-one witness statement. And then we're going to talk about the financial stuff. We're going to talk about the ending, the fireworks. And we're going to talk about, I usually don't get on the Twitterverse before doing a video, but I was kind of surprised at how everybody thought about that. Everybody thought that it was wonderful and just the greatest thing, applauding the prosecutor for taking that open door and running with it. We're going to talk about whether or not I think they opened the door. We're going to talk about why I think the prosecutor may have gone that route and gone so hard in that route. We're going to talk about how a lot of you on Twitter think they opened the door and what came out that was potentially door opening. And then we are also going to look at the Snapchat video, the actual video. We're going to see what Alex Murdaugh was wearing in that video. And we're going to see the other video, the kennel video. Both those videos are out now, which is kind of cool, doing the recap at 8:30 versus doing it when the trial's happening, where we're listening to a lot of this stuff. We can't see the summary exhibits. We can't see a lot of the videos. We can just hear stuff. So that's going to be a full show. And as if that's not enough and not enough to take us through the full hour, we've got a special guest joining us at 9 o'clock. My dad, Big George, is going to come in, talk about this. I hope he gets here before we get to the end of the day so he can listen to the prosecutor, ask those final questions, listen to what the judge does, listen to what the defense attorneys do, so we can get his take on whether or not he thinks the door was open, whether or not he thinks it was appropriate, or whether or not we may think that could have been a potential appellate issue to come in the future. But as we jump in, hit that subscribe button. Somebody just said we're going to get to 195K tonight. Sandra D. Let's get to 195K tonight. Hit that like button if you haven't already. So anybody that's interested in this case will come join us. Sharon says, Peter, you only think like a lawyer, not a juror. Well, you may be correct on that. I think there were some legal mistakes made. You may be surprised at where I think the outcome is leaning now. You may be surprised. But I'm talking purely from a legal standpoint, how that went down today. That's what we will get to. Azam just popping in to say hello, on our way to a meeting right now. Catch up in the rewatch crew. Thanks for the nightly recap, Peter. You're the best. Thank you so much, Azam. And we'll get to a lot more questions at the end, probably when my dad's here. I'm going to try to get through as much of the recap before he gets here so he doesn't have to sit through all that. And I know that's what a lot of you want off the top. And listen, I know we want to get to those final two witnesses, and we will, but I do think it's important to go chronologically for those of you who weren't able to catch the entire day. So we jump back in with the phone guy, Special Agent Britt. A lot of leading questions. They continue talking about Maggie's phone. There is an exhibit. It's detailed. It's a timeline, but some stuff seems out of order. I never like when an expert says something is not 100% accurate, or it may or may not be at this time or that time. It may be tough to figure out what actually happened. I never like when experts say things like that, but it's an honest answer sometimes. We get to Alex's phone, the call logs with numbers under seal. And there are chunks missing, which indicate he deleted them. Not proof he deleted them, but based on the way that in the habit of him answering his calls and looking at texts, he could have deleted some stuff. And they talk about how that text chain with the family, that group chat, how he didn't look at it till the next day. But on cross, the defense attorney's like, well, isn't it true you can look at your phone sometimes and you can read what the text is? You don't have to actually open it up and it won't check it as read. And the expert's like, well, yeah. So much of what has been said in this trial doesn't actually prove anything. And you can say both sides are giving possibilities and reasonable explanations for what happened. That cuts towards the criminal defendant because they don't have a burden. The possibilities and the reasonable expectations are not enough to convict somebody beyond a reasonable doubt, and they shouldn't be enough. Then we get to the messages on Alex's phone. And we see messages arriving in his phone at 8:31, the same one that arrived on Maggie's phone that he didn't read till the next day. Another one came at 5:10. This is another indication that he probably did see it. John Martin or Marvin, whatever his name is, texted on the same day, 6:07 at 5:10, and that was seen. So he did see that text from his brother, but not the one that was in the family group chat, which to me indicates that he probably did see it and just didn't check it as read or whatever. He didn't read it in a way that the phone picked it up as read, because we all know that can happen. A lot of people have done that before, right? You don't want to indicate to somebody that something's been read. So you see it this way and you're like, oh, I need to not open that one. Maybe he did that. Maybe he didn't. The steps were pretty huge for me. They were huge in a way to show where and when people were moving to really hone in on a time of death and the time these murders occurred. Combining these steps with Maggie and Paul's, to me, indicates that right around, 8:45, 8:50, before 9 o'clock is when these murders occurred. And it's really interesting that on Murdoch's phone, Alec Murdoch's phone, there were no steps from 8:09 to 9:02. And then from 9:02 to 9:06, there were a lot of steps. And on cross, we heard that those steps were right before Alec Murdoch gets in his car. So the state is saying, look, no steps for a whole hour. He must have been committing these crimes and put his phone somewhere else. That's possible. But the fact that there are no steps shown on his phone from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock does not prove that. That's not the same thing as having some GPS coordinates that he was at the scene of the crime when this happened, but something else puts him there, right? Just not the steps. So again, I thought the state was building and building and building, and the crescendo did not really hit when it came to the steps. Cause I was thinking, what does that prove? That proves we don't know exactly what his phone was doing from 8 to 9 o'clock, basically. All right. Then we get to Paul's phone. They finally cracked the code on Paul's phone. So they were able to get a lot of stuff from Paul's phone. He was having a conversation with Megan Kimball, a friend, around 8:48, 8:49. They were talking about movies. And then 8:48, he reads a text. We can prove that with the evidence from the expert. But at 8:49, 36 seconds later, he never reads that text, which again, the texts, the phones, the steps hone in on when we can really, I think, beyond a reasonable doubt, prove when the murders occurred. And then he stops using his phone. It dies at 10:34. It was only at 2 or 3%. I thought they laid that great. Again, it was a little clunky, but I thought they laid that great that, 8:48, it must have happened then, because if he would have kept using his phone from 8:49 to 10:34, it would have never lasted that long. It probably wouldn't have lasted past 9 o'clock the way he used it. I thought all that was great. Rogan is calling and texting afterwards, never answered. Compare that to Maggie's last text. It was right around 8:49 as well. So that all lines up with the timeline. And I hope they have a really beautiful timeline to show exactly how all this worked. Huge report from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. Just to show how much he used his phone. Everybody agreed. They asked every witness, how often is, or how does he use his phone? How would you describe it? He's always on it. Then we get to his steps. We see, I thought it's kind of weird. The steps thing seems inexact. And the defense did a good job of showing that. The prosecutor even did a good job of showing it was inexact because he has 283 steps. I think 8:42 was the last time his phone picked up steps. But we know he was walking around from 8:42 to 8:48 while he was around the kennels and messing with the dogs and doing that stuff. So, again, I think that's kind of weird that where the steps show that they stopped, that it is inexact, and the expert even said it was inexact. The orientation change of Maggie's phone, I've gone through this and done mental gymnastics on what it could prove, what it could not prove. And at the end of the day, I just kind of felt like I don't know what that actually proves. Whether or not he was holding the phone like this or holding the phone like this, to me, it doesn't prove a whole lot, especially when we get in cross to how the phone was potentially thrown or ditched somewhere. To me, wasn't that impactful. But this is when we first talk about the video at the kennels. We have created the timeline of when we believe the murders occurred, and just minutes before the murders occurred, the last call and FaceTime that he tried to do with Rogan. It was Rogan, right? Not Logan. For some reason, I'm blanking now whether it was Rogan or Logan. Yeah, Rogan. He tries to FaceTime. He calls him, but he wants a video. So they record a video that has three voices on it, and that video has been released. So we are going to actually watch and listen to that video together here. All right, here we go.
Get back.
So that's Paul's voice.
Quit, Cash.
That's Cash, Rogan's dog.
Quit. That's okay. Come here, Cash.
In the background, you hear a hose spraying, which I think is important for the defense. Why is there water everywhere? Were they cleaning stuff up? Did he clean up the crime scene? A hose was spraying in this video. It is kennels. They make messes. They eat. That's how they often clean it off. So just let's point out everything.
Hey, he's got a bird in his mouth.
That's Miss Maggie's voice, as we've heard later on. Now, this special agent can't identify the voices, but he can identify that there's three. So I'm connecting some dots of some later witnesses about how this timeline is very damning for Alec Murdoch.
Bubba. Hey, Bubba.
So I'm going to back that up because we're about to hear Alec Murdoch say Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, he's got a bird in his mouth.
Bubba. Hey, Bubba.
It's a guinea.
It's a chicken.
It's a chicken. Again, you hear a clear male voice in the background with Maggie, and it's not Paul because you can clearly hear Paul is closer to the phone.
Come here, Bubba.
Another, come here, Bubba, yelling in the background, a different male voice, not Paul.
It's a guinea.
It's a chicken.
Come here, Bubba.
Come here, Bubba.
And the reason there's focus on the tail is because there was a potential issue with the tail, and he was asking Rogan if there was an issue with the tail. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of crying today from Alec Murdoch, from the friends when they watch these videos. You hear Paul, you hear Maggie. Incredibly sad. Incredibly sad. So this to me was like, okay, now I'm starting to get it. Murdoch's there. minutes, literally minutes before. This was taken after the FaceTime call that was 11 seconds. Before 8:49, when nothing was ever done on his phone again, Murdoch's there. Like, now, I did write in my notes, we hear all this, but they're going to have to prove that was Alex's voice. Yeah, I hear three voices, but this officer doesn't know it, right? And at that point, I was like, listen, it could mean something. Later, it means a lot more. But then the cross-examination by the defense attorney was awesome, I thought. He asked, did you try to match up the steps between Maggie and Alex's phone? Duh. Like, we're getting all these steps, exactly what time the steps start and the steps stop. Yet you never matched up to see if they lined up? I don't believe that. I honestly don't believe that. Because when we match them up, they don't match. And they don't make sense. So much so, and the defense gets out the butcher block, by the way, and he starts writing up a timeline, which is very helpful. I think the prosecution needs to do that so the witnesses, I mean, so the jury can actually understand and follow what's going on. But eventually, the defense literally gets the expert to admit something that, again, just starts making your head spin back the other way. And this is when I tweeted that a lot of you came after me for this tweet, that right when I thought the prosecution was building something, starts to go bad. And they did it multiple times. They did it here, and they did it with the next witness. Every time they seem to get a shot, they take a step back. And this was the first time today I posted after the second one, but let's take a listen together. It's just about a minute. I've got a couple short clips we're going to play together of the trial. It's, all right, 1.5 speed's fine.
So, you, I mean, you don't really have any, you can't really testify as to why he would take his wife's phone, and, I guess the state alleges, and throw it out the window of his car, half a mile from his house.
That's right. No idea why people were thinking or do things they do.
And we previously established that his phone and Maggie's phone were not, he's walking, they're not walking together. Is that correct?
Correct. There are no steps recorded on the devices together.
So he's walking.
Correct. There are no steps recorded on the devices together.
Without her phone does an orientation change while he's walking without her phone. Is that correct?
I can just say both devices were not recording steps at the same time.
And they're not recording steps at the same time, and he's walking at 9:06:12.
Correct.
Therefore, hers is not recording steps at 9:06.
Correct.
So his phone is walking, hers is not. At the time, her phone has this final orientation change before it's found on the side of the road.
Yes, sir. Okay.
And in your 20-some years experience in law enforcement, that doesn't make it seem reasonable to you that he did not, that the person who had Alex's phone did not also have Maggie's phone at 9:06:12.
It appears the phones were not together, being moved by the same person because they're not recording steps.
That's the state's expert. It appears the phones were not moving together. That is not good for the state, right? Because they're putting all this cell phone data. And that's why I start to think, like, why put all the steps in? I get that they're using little bits and pieces. Why put all the steps in? Why not put the text messages, the calls, the timeline of, we know it all ended here, we know where the video is, and we know Alec Murdoch was there? I think the steps hurt more than they help. That's just me personally. You guys let me know in the chat, as I know you will, if you think they helped. So then a very interesting thing happened where they discussed Maggie's phone and how it wasn't necessarily secured properly or quickly enough so that the GPS coordinates that we could have gotten from Maggie's phone only dated back to June 9th because it wasn't put in the proper bag or airplane mode or something. There was something that was screwed up by law enforcement that did not allow them to go back and get the GPS coordinates all the way back to the date of the murder. Because I guess they're saying, because it was found a half mile from the house. He talked a lot about how it didn't make any sense that Murdoch would take the phone and ditch it a half mile from the house. I don't really get that. It didn't make any sense. Then prosecution gets up on redirect and they want to talk about the steps, not necessarily matching up because it was an important, it was a hit for them. 8:53 to 8:55, there were steps on Maggie's phone, but 8:09 to 9:02, there were no steps on Alex's phone. So the state's arguing that he could have just had Maggie's phone, not his own. And we know from like 8:49 to maybe to 9:02, 8:49 to 9:02 is when the murders happened. So all the steps on Maggie's phone don't match up with the steps on Alec's phone. Therefore, Alec left his phone, came and got Maggie's phone. That's the argument they're making. But I don't see any proof of that. The absence of steps on Alec's phone does not mean that he had Maggie's phone. The steps on Maggie's phone doesn't mean Alec had Maggie's phone. Whoever committed the murder could have had the phone. And I actually thought it was a plausible explanation on cross that, or may have been recross, where maybe they had Maggie's phone, Alec called, and they're like, oh, crap, and then they ditched it. I think that's a plausible explanation. Again, the defense does not have to prove that that's what happened beyond a reasonable doubt. They don't have to prove that. The state has to prove what happened. The discussion about tossing the phone this way or throwing the phone that way and whether the orientation change could have happened to me, basically, the expert, the defense attorney who was either on cross or recross, he got the expert to agree that the orientation change actually proves nothing. It literally proves nothing. It could have been anything. It could have been nothing. It could have been somebody picking up the phone. It could have been somebody throwing the phone. It could have been somebody falling. I heard so many explanations. I'm not even 100% positive what the state's trying to say happened with that final orientation change. We'll find out in closing. But I was like, okay, so all that talk about the orientation change, but like the experts basically saying, defense attorney, no, that doesn't indicate this, it doesn't indicate that. It could be, it could not be. So I think that was kind of a waste. Then we had GSR guy, the officer that did the GSR test, and they were like, oh, you knew Alec Murdoch because he was a prosecutor against gang members, right? He was a prosecutor prosecuting criminal cases. I think they're winking, saying, so he knows how to create the perfect murder. He knows what to tell law enforcement and what to do in these situations. Some jurors may buy that. Some of you guys may buy that. I don't think this guy was saying that he must be guilty because he prosecuted a case in the past, and he was brought up as a expert in gang slang, I guess, in that case. But I thought, once again, a state's witness became a defense witness on cross-examination. Yes, Alec Murdoch was respectful, blah, blah, blah. Again, I don't really think that matters as much at this point either. But you know what does matter to me? Is the GSR guy that came and did the GSR testing on Alec Murdoch that the state put on as the GSR guy, the defense asked, did you do a thorough job gathering GSR that night? Yes. Did you intentionally leave anything out? No. Because we know what's coming later. No GSR, at least not an amount of GSR on Alec Murdoch at that point that you would expect if somebody just committed a double murder with two different guns. They followed up with, you knew he went and grabbed the shotgun. I found out later that happened. It can be transferred. Yes. So we know he's going to have some GSR from holding that shotgun, or that's, I should say, more reasonably connected or makes more sense with holding a shotgun than firing multiple bullets from multiple guns, killing two people. So I thought that was important for the defense again. But then we get to Rogan Gibson. They give background on Paul and Maggie. Really sad. Alex crying the whole time, nicknames for everyone, Big Red, Handsome, Miss Maggie, Mr. Alec. They went to Moselle all the time. They shoot Blackhawks. There was a lot of discussion with both the friends about shooting the hogs at night with the certain specs and how they specked out the gun with a red dot, things like that. Paul liked to carry certain weapons like this Eagle something shotgun, which he was shown at trial, which is in evidence, which we know because none of the guns in evidence are the murder weapon, is not the murder weapon. So we just, again, talked about that gun. That's not the murder weapon. Paul used his cell phone a lot. But getting to June 7, 2021, they had some communication around lunch. He gets up early to work. He goes to bed. He sleeps hard, basically, which is why I didn't hear a lot of the phone calls. But at 7:27... I'm sorry, not at 7:27. At 8:44, that's when that video is made. He hears the video. He says he thinks he's 99% sure it was Alec's voice. He tried calling him again. He tried figuring out why he's not sending the video. And then he ends up finding out in the morning what had happened. He's devastated. And then later, they talk more and they start getting lost in the weeds again, I think, but he is 99% sure that it was Alec Murdoch. Now it gets stronger later. Eventually he says he's 100% sure that it's Alec Murdoch on that tape. And so now relating it back to the cell phone expert, that's the smoking gun. That's as close as we're going to get for the smoking gun for the prosecutor in this case. We have him there on video. We've confirmed that's his name, and the murders took place just minutes later. Now it becomes a lot more unreasonable that he disappeared. But I still think there's a lot of work for the state to do. That's what they're hoping is the smoking gun. So cross on this guy. It was a good cross. He's close to his family. Alec treated him like one of his own. Very good relationship between Paul and Alec. Good relationship with Maggie and Paul. I'm sorry, Maggie and Alec. Both of these witnesses that were just personal witnesses were glowingly talking about Alec Murdoch. And that should have been an indication to the state that this guy likes Alec Murdoch, regardless of what's happened and how sad he is. He has positive thoughts about him. The threats and harassments weren't too crazy and weren't too bad. I thought that was bad for the defense because I think they thought he was going to say there were a lot of threats and it was kind of crazy and scary, but he didn't. And I think that was a surprise because it was obvious the defense has talked to these two friends and they're positive witnesses for both sides. Talked about hunting with lead versus hunting with, is it steel? I don't even remember. Whatever the other non-lead thing is. And you couldn't use lead in the water. So that's why you use different things for waterfowl versus land game or whatever. I'm a city boy. Remember like the lawyer said. Okay. Here's another big point that the defense is also going to try to use. You said in front of everybody that Alec was hollering for Bubba on the tape and Alec did not correct you, did he? And he said, no. And on cross, the defense asked a question. Alec didn't push back when you said it was him on the tape, did he? No. So the defense is going to start developing this argument that Alec is not going to deny he was there. Alec is not going to deny that that was him on the tape. He lied to the cops, but everybody lies to the cops, right? He may not have been fully truthful to the cops because he was starting to feel like they were threatening him with these questions. That's basically what they said in opening statements. So I think the defense is going to kind of be like, yeah, maybe everything he told the cops wasn't a lie. And I think some jurors will buy that. And then a huge moment, in my opinion, happened at the end of cross. And we're going to play it here together.
Been around Alec, Maggie, and Paul most all your life. Was there any, did you notice any signs of distress or anxiety or anything out of the ordinary?
I did not.
And you've been around Maggie and Alec and their whole family a lot?
Almost all of my life, yes, sir.
And would you see Alec openly show his display of affection and love to Maggie?
Yes, sir.
And from your observation, they have a close, good relationship?
That's correct.
And they were loving to each other and to Paul and Buster and their friends, correct?
That's correct.
And you can you think of any circumstance that you can envision, knowing them as you do, where Alec would brutally murder Paul and Maggie?
Not that I can think of.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
So the state called this witness, right? Not that he can think of. And then the state gives us just a little view into what they're going to try to do later in their redirect here. I'm going to skip kind of the beginning portion of it just so that we can get to it. But this is where they flop at the end, in my opinion. You can't ask this question if you don't know the answer to it.
Thanks for
heard Maggie and Alec at 8:40. Is there any problem with that voice call? Or when you're in and out here.
All right, here we go.
Down there at the sheds, did they have like outdoor lighting down there?
Yes, sir, they did.
And if all that was on, could you see all that lighting from the house?
yes, you would be able to see that there were lights on from the house.
If those lights were on, it'd be pretty well lit up. Is that right?
If all of them were, yes.
You were asked about the boat wreck. Were you aware that Paul had been charged in that boat wreck?
I was.
Were you aware that Alec Murdoch had been sued in that boat wreck?
I was.
What was your perception of Alec's wealth? Did you believe he was a fairly wealthy man?
Yes, sir.
How long have you known Alec Murdoch?
Pretty much all my life.
As you sit here today, did you really know him?
The defense doesn't want him to answer the question because they don't really know what he's going to say. Nobody knows what he's going to say. The state thinks it's going to be good for them. It sounds like the defense thinks it's going to be good for the state. The judge overrules it.
Yes, I know Ms. Ellick.
But as you sit here today, do you really know him?
Yes, I know Mr. Ellick.
Yes, I know Mr. Alec. That's how he finishes. That's how the state finishes their redirect. So then the state argues that the door has been opened and this was where the door was opened. I've heard a lot of people say it was the birthday video, which we're going to get to later. The door was open during the birthday video because of a certain person that was there. And we'll get there when we play that birthday video. But do you think can you think of a reason? It's asking this fact witness, can you think of a reason? Because they brought you up here as Mr. I know the story of the family, that he would do this. And he says no. And that opens the door to all these financial crimes. How does that open the door? The judge, I've really liked him throughout this trial. He starts to just miss me with this stuff, letting them talk about this financial stuff. I mean, the BUI, that boat case, that Alec getting sued, fine with the threats and whatever. And if they want to talk about that pressure, but the stealing from clients and listen, seems like there's a lot of evidence in those cases that Alec Murdoch is an absolute scumbag and the worst kind of lawyer, the worst kind of human being taking advantage of people in vulnerable positions. And we can have that discussion another day, but that does not prove that he committed these murders as we've talked about before. And that is what's frustrating me throughout this process. And the judge refuses to make a call. He basically is like, ask your question and I'll figure it out then. So let me get through. So my dad should be here in any minute. I'm going to get through this last portion here. And then hopefully he's here when we get to the cross and the redirect to add his insight. So Will Loving is the next witness, friend of Paul's. They talked about the guns. They talked about shooting. They talked about all that. Paul was the apple of Alec's eye. Alec and Maggie had a great relationship. Awesome relationship. Both of them had awesome relationships. So all of that was there. He found out what happened. He went down there. He knew about the BUI. He didn't talk to Alec much about what happened. And then they ask. They sold one of their other properties, right? Yeah. Why? Getting into money issues because, or sorry, that was my note. They start to get into the money issues. They sold it because of all the lawsuits. And then he asks, and the witness admits he has no actual information on that. So literally, it's all based on hearsay or like reading something in the media. He cannot testify to that. He should not be able to testify as to why they sold their house. Unless Alec Murdoch told him, which he said he didn't, that is absolutely improper. That should absolutely have been sustained as an objection. And that is absolutely an appellate issue, that this is how they start getting into the financial issues. He watches the video as well, and he's 100% sure that that's Alec Murdoch. Then on cross is where he talked about apple of his eye, great relationship, things like that, no issues going on. Yes, Paul left guns everywhere. The whole like missing gun, right? We've heard a lot about this missing gun, this 300 blackout AR. So the state's trying to infer with all this evidence or get the jury to understand that that's the murder weapon and it disappeared because Alec made it disappear. The defense is arguing that it was Paul's gun. It was a replacement for one that he lost. He lost guns all the time. He probably lost this one. It's a weird argument on that side. Or There's no security cameras. They leave stuff unlocked that could have been stolen. The state was like, has anything else ever been stolen? I think it's a dumb argument, but the defense does not have to prove what happened. They're giving the jury a very reasonable explanation as to what could have happened to that gun. Now, Alec Murdoch says it happened a long time ago. This witness said he knows they had it in March or April because they bought that spec, and it turned out they bought it in the beginning of March, and they used it on, you know, a few weeks later, March 26 or something like that. So that was some really important and good evidence for the state as well. But then they play this video of Alec's birthday party. I thought it was kind of insignificant. Other people thought it was incredibly important. And we hear that Chris Wilson's on that video. And the Will testified that a lot of friends were around. They were grieving. They were crying. It was tough. Alec was crying. But on redirect, the prosecutor couldn't wait to ask about Chris Wilson. He wasn't brought up when they talked about the birthday. It was just kind of like, look, everybody loves Alec, whatever. But the prosecutor, he might as well have fist pumped like the Kate Moss situation. Chris Wilson was in that video, right? Who is he? He's one of Alec's good friends. He's his best friend, right? And best friends do what they should do for each other. Or sorry, they should do each other right, right? And he said yes. The witness said yes. Well, Chris Wilson is one of the guys that can roast Alec Murdoch on the financial crimes. He was apparently duped by Alec Murdoch. He's working, I think, against Alec Murdoch as a witness for the state in those cases. So because he was in a birthday video, that opens the doors to the financial crimes? All right, my dad is here as well, so I'm going to bring him in to discuss this a little bit. We do have a little bit more of the video to watch together as well. Whoops. All right, Dad, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello, yes.
Hello.
Joining us, this is my dad, everybody. If you're new to the channel for the Alec Murdoch cases, my dad has kind of a similar resume to some of the lawyers in this case. He was a former state prosecutor, former federal prosecutor, chief of the criminal division in the Middle District of Florida. So that's like the head honcho for all the Middle District federal criminal cases here in Florida. Then went out on his own, criminal defense attorney, and now does criminal defense and PI, majority criminal defense, a lot like the two main lawyers in this case, Harpulian and Griffin. Different disposition. He's not a Southern guy, even though we're in Florida. But similar resume, takes on cases like this, has handled some high-profile cases and talked through this stuff, dealt with wealthy clients, even lawyers as clients, doctors as clients, difficult clients, easy clients. But the theme of the day was, did they open the door to these financial crimes and financial situations? And before you give your overarching answer, playing a video with a guy in the video that could be a big witness for you in any world, how do you see that opening the door to talking about these financial crimes or what that guy may know about his best friend?
Well, if you're limiting the question to that video, I agree with you. Just playing the video, somebody in the video, that doesn't open the door because that video does not allege any factual information about the financial crimes. So just a video. Now, I don't think the video alone. I do think there's some
tightrope
walking.
Hold on. I don't want to jump ahead. I know, but okay. I don't want to jump ahead yet because I want to play some of the more questions that you're going to respond to. So the video on its own, but then number two, you can't open the door yourself to something you want. And the prosecutor's the one that pointed out Chris Wilson and said, who is that? Alec Murdoch's best friend. And you do right by your best friend, right? The defense, if they would have asked those questions, then maybe, but the prosecutor asked them, you can't open your own door.
That's correct.
All right. So then we get to another video, and I'm not sure how to do this, why it's not showing you on the screen with the videos. Maybe when
That's
I do
okay.
this.
I can see it.
There we go. Okay. So I'm going to remove this video, and we are going to share the Snapchat video that was somewhere around 7 o'clock, I believe. That's when this witness testified to, but it's pretty bright outside. So it was evening or earlier that day. Okay. And we're going to play this Snapchat video. It's only 9 seconds long, but it's really important in my opinion. So this is the tree that was having issues that Paul was sending out on his Snapchat. And Alec testified to, and everybody seemed to testify, him and Paul were together, you know, screwing around the hunting place and looking at these trees that weren't doing so well. Well, we know what clothes Alec Murdoch was wearing after the murders occurred. It was a clean white shirt and some khaki slash green shorts, not a blue button down shirt and pants and these shoes. This is very important evidence for the state, in my opinion, because they keep arguing that he changed these clothes. They've made statements like those clothes look like they were freshly washed, but it's like, that doesn't prove anything. Prove to me he was wearing something else. Well, now they have. In none of Alec Murdoch's statements did he mention that he changed clothes. Where are these clothes? Was the state able to locate them? Did they find these clothes? Did they test these clothes? That's a big question I have. So it was really cool that this video actually came out. They did testify that the clothes were different, but I got to be honest with you. Some of the lawyering is a little confusing in the weeds in this case, and I'm hoping the jury is following. But because the jury got to actually watch this video, I'm glad we got to watch it as well, because it is pretty wild to see that he was, in fact, wearing different clothes. How big of a deal do you think that was, Dad?
Well, I think it's really important because the state does have to give an explanation. It's inconceivable to a jury that he would be totally clean and fresh after these murders. So they've got to come up with something for the jury, and they have some reasonable explanation for the fact that their theory of changing clothes holds water. And they did. They've got to, yeah. They had to come up with something.
Yeah, because the state has done a really good job of proving that his clothes were clean. Everybody right. has said it. It's like, okay, guys, we get it. The clothes are clean, but explain to us why that helps you, that there's no blood or gunshot residue or anything like that on the clothes. And here we go. Now they've given us a plausible explanation that he actually did change clothes at some time right before the murders happened. All right, now we get to one of the biggest parts of the day, the biggest fireworks here, as the state was emboldened to ask these financial questions that we've been tiptoeing around, that the judge has not made a decision on, and that we're going to hear more argument about this tomorrow morning. Seems like this was a little early, but let's listen to the end of this redirect with the final witnesses, the last things the jury heard before they left.
On the video.
Long pants and a shirt?
Yep. Yes, sir.
And those particular shoes?
Yes, sir.
And you watched that video in real time when it came in from Paul's phone that evening, is that correct?
That is correct.
You were asked about the relationship that you observed between Alec and Paul and Alec and Maggie. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So you're right. It was a very good relationship. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. It was a good relationship in my point of view.
Did you know anything about Alec's finances?
No, I did not.
Did you know anything about his law practice?
So right when he says, and Dad, chime in here, right when he says he has no idea about Alec Murdoch's finances, first off, I don't think the questions should have been allowed to be asked anyways. But right when he says he has no idea about his finances, it should end there, right?
Well, I think they didn't object because they didn't want to highlight it. You know, it was, well, you know, you think about it, our big deal, that question, fine. Then he moved on to, you know, anything about his law practice. So I think they didn't want to highlight it because they didn't frankly believe that the prosecutor would go into the other crimes without approaching the bench first and talking to the judge.
No, no. They've told them the whole time they're going to do this. We've had this discussion 50 times. They've told them from the beginning, they had a whole hearing on it saying, we want to talk about the financial crimes as a motive. Right before this happened, they said, we want to talk about the financial crimes as a motive. They knew that this is exactly where the prosecutor was going.
What did the judge say when they said that?
I'll listen to the question before making my determination.
Okay. Well, maybe they didn't want to highlight it. That's my only theory. Because they didn't object.
It gets blown up. But don't you think that once he says, no, I don't know about their finances, that he shouldn't be able to continue on?
Oh, absolutely. Because he's just now, then he's testifying. At that point, that's what he's doing. He is testifying Go ahead.
You're talking about the lawyers testifying?
Right. When the lawyer starts asking the questions, he's really testifying at that point.
Oh, yeah. You have no idea. Here, we're about to listen to him testify for 2 minutes here because this guy's literally telling you, I have no foundation for any of these answers. I don't know anything about his finances.
Yeah, you shouldn't have asked that.
No, I did not.
Did you know anything about where he gets his money?
No, I did not.
Did you know anything about where he was spending his money?
No, I did not.
Did you know anything about what his bank account balances were?
No, sir, I did not.
Did you know anything about the debt that he was carrying? Do you know anything about that?
No, sir.
Did you know this?
Totally improper, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you know anything about the debt he was carrying? It's like, what? The guy just said right. He had no idea about his finances. Right. So you're telling the jury now that he has debt.
The question assumes a fact.
Yeah, that's the point. So these are leading questions. They should have been objected to on that bounds. Just because he said, did you know? Or what do you know? Doesn't mean it's a leading question. Doesn't mean it's not a leading question. A leading question assumes the answer in the question, like you just said. So you can ask a leading question with a what, how, when, where, and why, and it can still be a leading question. It doesn't always have to end in correct, although some of
these I don't know why he's not objecting yet. So.
It's wild. Thank you, Jay Kotzer, for this.
The specific things that were going on in the boat case the week that Paul and Maggie were murdered.
No, sir.
You know,
so again, did you know the specific things that were going on that week in the boat case? So he's telling the jury that something specific was happening in the boat case that week, right?
Yes.
Anything about civil discovery and how it can expose financial information?
That's a ridiculous question.
What foundation does this kid have about knowing about civil discovery? And the reason for that, just so you know, from a previous hearing, because I know you haven't been following it as closely, but from a previous hearing, they want to get into the fact that they were going to allege punitive damages in the BUI case against Alec Murdoch and get into his bank accounts. And he was fighting against that. Like, this kid's going to have any information on that. Totally
improper.
I'm
really surprised because I thought this judge would do a better job on this.
I feel like
of course, there's been no objections.
I feel like the judge has been good at this point. But to be fair, the defense has fought this a lot already. I agree. They should have objected to every single one of these questions, protected the record. But they have put on the record that they don't think he should have been able to go into any of this, number one. Number two, this is a bad job by the prosecutor. I think the prosecutor is good. I think this guy's actually really good. This is a bad job asking these questions while you know full well this witness does not know the answers to these questions. You know that.
But Peter, he's getting away with it. And he's getting away with it. And that's what's happening. You know, he's getting away with it and he's planting information in the jury's mind that they wouldn't normally get from the witness. They're getting it from the prosecutor.
And I think it's totally improper is my point. That's not what prosecutors are supposed to do. They're not supposed to get away with what they can.
It's not, but he's getting away with it.
I'm disappointed in this guy because I have actually been talking him up like he's been doing a good job. I think all the lawyers have really been doing a good job, especially the main ones, him and the two main defense lawyers. I thought I've done a really good job. Bad job by him here, in my opinion.
Do you know anything at all about him being confronted on June 7th, 2021 about
object?
You see how he tried to speed up there? I know I'm listening on 1.25 right. speed. He tried to speed up that question. Finally, we get an objection
right. to get it
because
out
because he's now right. talking about a specific date and a specific thing that happened on that specific date. He's literally testifying. He's every one of these questions leading, which he's done a ton throughout the trial.
Do you know anything about him being confronted on the morning of June 7th, 2021, about $792,000 of missing fees from his law firm?
Objection, Your Honor. Totally improper.
Overruled.
Did you know anything?
He overruled it.
I don't understand. Listen, if you were going to let the state get into this evidence, fine. Make a decision like that, judge, fine. It shouldn't come in during this witness. And it definitely shouldn't come in with the prosecutor testifying to it.
There's multiple objections. There's multiple objections here. One is the witness already testified he doesn't know anything about his finances. So even if it is relevant to get into his finances, you can't do it with a witness that knows nothing about his finances. So just
foundation.
That.
Foundation, speculation, leading, improper, 404. Like there's a million objections that can come for this line of. I would have maybe inappropriately thrown a fit if I was the defense lawyer and this was happening.
Have they been approaching the bench much to argue?
Not at all. I don't think they've done it once.
They should have approached the bench and talked to them.
They've done some speaking objections and the judge has told them not to. incredibly experienced lawyers all the way across the board. But I would have done everything I could to be like, judge, send the jury out, proffer whatever these stupid questions are that are totally inappropriate, and he should not be able to ask them. They didn't do any of that. I don't know if it's different in South Carolina and you can't proffer like we are here. I have done this and sent the jury out and made the other side proffer for much less damning evidence and questions.
Don't think about that.
No, I did not.
You know, any of the facts of those things that I just asked you about?
No, sir.
So after he already said no, did you know anything about the facts of any of those things I just asked you about? Just to hammer it home one more
all
time.
All the facts that I testified to, do you know anything about those facts?
Exactly. Exactly.
And you know what else? Jurors are going to believe those facts because they do normally believe prosecutors. And they would say, well, he wouldn't have said that if it wasn't true.
The world believes those facts. Right. Frankly, I may even believe those facts, right? Because of the stuff I know. A lot of that stuff is true. It just shouldn't have come in there. The world is looking at this like, yes, bad. Now they've got him. They've got this scumbag fraudster who's been stealing from his clients. Mm-hmm. And while I may agree with the scumbag fraudster part, this is not the way to get it done, people. I'm telling you, people may think it's good or just because it's happening to a bad guy, but this is not how it should be done. I think we're done here, but let me just finish here.
But you know, Peter, you're right. But you know, the problem is the judge overruled the objection. So that means you have a judicial determination that question was okay.
We're going to talk about that a little bit more. Let's listen to the judge talk about how they're going to argue this tomorrow, and then we'll get into why timing wise this just didn't make any sense.
No,
step down.
And you can tell right there the defense attorneys knows they just got kicked in the gut with that ending testimony there, and that's what the jury is going to think about as they leave for the day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. We'll see you at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Please do not discuss the case.
All right, so they're about to come back here.
This day, tomorrow morning, however, I will address the Rule 404 issue, particularly 404B, that provides that evidence of other wrongs, crimes, or acts may be admissible to show motive and some other things. And we'll address that issue tomorrow morning. And as far as witness preparation or witness availability, particularly in light of my ruling with regard to the last question posed, trust that the state will be prepared to move forward with evidence that establishes facts by clear and convincing evidence.
That's a little wink, wink that I'm going to let it happen. But basically he's saying, so the state's going to be able to come and try to prove by clear and convincing evidence that they need to get over the 404B stuff. Dad, why don't you explain? I think that's all we need from that. Why don't you explain what 404B is and why it's so important?
Well, 404B is sometimes called the Williams rule, sometimes called similar fact evidence. And that is let's say you have two murders. They're both done with 9mm. The robber had a green mask, had walked with a cane and had a beard, and the person was shot in the chest both times. Those similar facts go to prove an issue. It was the same guy that did both murders. In this case, they're going to use the similar fact evidence to prove another issue, which is motive. And motive is not an essential element of the crime. You do not have to prove a motive to prove a crime. But everybody wants to know why you did it. I mean, that's always the question in people's minds. Why did you do it? Motive is an acceptable reason to put in similar fact evidence. However, what they really have to establish is that the defense is putting on that he had no motive. And that's what they're doing. Right. So that by doing that, by putting on that they had no motive, I think that that might open the door for some motive evidence. Although this last witness, it was ridiculous for them to put it on with him. But if they can put on people that actually know the facts and that actually can talk about the finances, they might be able to get away with similar fact evidence in this case to prove the motive that he did it, why he did it. That's important.
Okay. So let me give you some context. But before I give you context onto whether or not you think it's going to be admissible in this case, why is it so important? Meaning, why don't we usually allow propensity evidence in trials like this, especially criminal defense, criminal defendant cases? Why don't we let that propensity evidence in?
Because you don't want people convicted because they're bad people. You don't want people convicted because they've done it in the past, because they have a criminal record. That's not a reason for conviction. You want them convicted on the facts of that case that pertain to that charge and only that charge. And that's why 404B is an exception to that rule, because if you can establish some other pattern, some other reason to put the evidence in, that's fine. But you can't put it in to assassinate their character or to show that they have a propensity for committing a crime. That just wouldn't be fair. We really need to think about it.
Right. I mean, we don't want that. We don't want people that have already been convicted of DUI getting convicted of theft just because they've been convicted of DUI. And I will tell you right now, jurors are absolutely more likely to convict somebody they know have already committed other crimes or been convicted of other crimes. Absolutely. Statistics show that. So in order to get these financial crimes in, Dad, you're saying, okay, so they have to say the defense is saying no motive. Absolutely. The defense has been saying that the whole time. Why would he do this? It makes no sense. There's no reason for it, right? So that's absolutely a question in the case that the defense has presented. However, just the fact that you've committed other crimes is not motive for committing another crime. So how do they have to connect those crimes in order to actually make it make sense that these other crimes are proving motive? And not just that he's a bad guy that doesn't care about people or whose moral compass is off.
You know, I don't know their witness list, but the judge does. The judge seems to know that there are witnesses out there that the state's been holding back, waiting for this ruling, and then the state's going to bring those witnesses and said, have those witnesses ready. I mean, I got that hint. I don't know if you caught, but I got that hint. So people are going to be able to testify directly that there is some connection. There is going to have to be some connection. Life insurance. I mean, I don't know. You know the case better than I do, but maybe it's a life insurance situation. Maybe it's an inheritance situation. There may be some money out there and for a way for him to get the money if he kills his wife and his son so that he can cover his debts.
Okay, fine. Fair. I 100% agree with you. If there's life insurance, that makes total sense. Everybody's saying, and all the research shows right now, there was no life insurance on either one of them. Okay. So that's number one. I don't think that's what they're, I think the state is trying to prove these financial crimes motives come from the fact that he thinks Maggie or Paul was going to rat him out. That's what I think they're trying to prove. And I don't know how they're going to prove that. Everybody's testifying how great everything was. All the recordings leading up to it was all good things between them. I know people are saying they've heard rumblings about Maggie wanting to file for the divorce or things like that, but there's no real evidence that they knew any of this or that they were going to come forward with any of this. And I think that's what they have to prove, right? I think if they prove that, I'm in. If they prove that Maggie was already reaching out to law enforcement, that Paul was reaching out, that they had made some statements, that they had made some deals, absolutely it should come in.
Well,
if they
right.
prove some real motive, if there was a life insurance policy that we don't know about, absolutely it should come in. If Maggie has a huge inheritance, absolutely it should come in. If they can actually connect it to motive, I'm in. It should come in. But if not, the bell has already been rung. The bell has already been rung.
Well, I can tell you the jurors are going home tonight, and that's all they're thinking about are those last couple of questions. You know, they can't wait to hear about that. And they expect to hear about that when they come back.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that do you see any world that the judge is going to deny this? How could the judge possibly deny this mention of the other financial crimes now that it's already been asked?
I think if the judge was going to deny it, he would have sustained the objection or would have at least reserved ruling on the objection. But he did not. He flat out overruled the objection, which flat out let the questions in to a witness who knew nothing about it. And then so what's he going to do when you got a witness that does know about it and is able to testify to it? How can he overrule how can he sustain objections to that? So I think it's coming in.
So I have a question. When you were a prosecutor, I know it's very different as a criminal defense attorney and When I was a prosecutor, it was very different than a criminal defense attorney, and it's now very different as a civil plaintiff's attorney. I'm even more careful. How careful are you as a prosecutor to not do something that's going to create a mistrial or potential appeal in a case you really want to win and think you're going to win?
Well, it's important, but keep in mind this. You have to win first, because in criminal cases, if you lose, you don't have another chance. But if you win and the court reverses you, you can come back and try the guy again. But if you lose the case and the guy's found not guilty at the first trial, it's over. So, I think they want to win this case, and I think they're willing to take the chance and walk the tightrope. And again, they did nothing wrong when a judge says they did nothing wrong. So that judge is telling them they did nothing wrong with these questions. So, and keep in mind that there is a presumption for that judge that he is correct in his evidentiary rulings. So it's always hard to reverse a judge on an evidentiary ruling like that.
I think that they felt like they were losing the case and they were willing to take the risk. That's what I felt like. I don't feel like it's been going well for them. I think they could still win because I think a lot of people hate Alec Murdoch, especially in that area. I think with the financial crimes, there is a very, very, very high chance at conviction in this case if they're allowed to get into all the financial crimes and all the scummy stuff that he did, that there's a lot of evidence for that they can present to this jury. I think he is sunk if they get into his financial crime, not even because he committed these murders, but because of the generally bad guy rule, and people will convict because they think he's a scumbag for doing this to all these people that are vulnerable. So I think if they get into the financial crimes as motive, he's cooked, and I think they're gonna convict him all day, every day.
But let's not forget. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just say don't forget another legal premise on 404B, and that is it cannot become a feature of the trial. In other words, they cannot make his other crimes more important in this trial than the case itself. And if they put too much evidence on of the other crimes, the case can get reversed.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why they've gone so boringly through all of this evidence, because we've already had, multiple days of the state's case. So if they do 2 days on the financial crimes, it's like, oh, we only did 2 days. We did 5 days on the other stuff, when in reality, it's been boring, irrelevant stuff half the time of background that we don't really need. I think it's going to be a major appellate issue. I think the judge is going to let it in. I think it's a humongous appellate issue, because I think without that, it's really hard to believe and connect these dots. You have to take a lot of leaps to convict Alec Murdoch with no murder weapon, no connection, nothing saying he's there, no gunshot residue, a totally halfway investigation. They didn't check for, any blood in any cleaning materials and any pipes. They didn't even check the mom's house, which is where he said he was for the alibi. I mean, they messed up the phones. They didn't get the GPS data because they didn't get Maggie's phone information quick enough. Like, they messed up so many things in this investigation that I think if they would have done it right, they probably could have convicted him. Also, two different murder weapons, and he did all this. Here's the other thing, and I'm going to get to the questions now. It's already been an hour. Holy cow. All right, so we're about to get to the questions, but here's just the last thing. This was really interesting to me today because everybody is convicting him. It's over. Everybody's changed their mind. Not everybody, but most people in the public have changed their mind now. He's convicted. The jury gasped when they heard $792,000 of missing fees from reports in the courtroom. And I do think there were some really good points for the state today. So I definitely was ticking towards that way a lot more than any other day. But so the motive is, let's just track with this for a second. The motive is somebody asked him for a check for $792,000. He didn't have it. The walls were caving in. The volcano was going to explode. So what does he do? He freaks out. He leaves work early. He goes to kill his wife and son, who I don't know how they have anything to do with the person at working asking him about this fee, but he freaks out. He leaves work early. He goes to his wife and son. He hangs out with his son all day, then kills his wife and son, but at the same time plans this perfect murder. Two weapons, ditches the weapons, creates an alibi, makes sure he doesn't have his phone, calls their phone right after it happened, has his car going to all the right places, cries and seems authentic, at least in some of the interviews. Cleans up, gets rid of the gunshot residue, all that stuff. He plans that after freaking out at work that day because the walls are caving in. It's a stretch for me. It's a stretch for me.
Well, they've got to do something.
If this guy's name was John Smith, I would be like, this guy's not guilty. But because I know he's a scumbag, I'm like, yeah, he probably is guilty. Honestly, that's how it feels.
Keep in mind, I wasn't I didn't hear the jury selection, but he's a big shot lawyer in the community.
Family. Disgraced. Everybody hates him now.
But did they get jurors that don't know who he is?
Some of them do know who he is. It was a very weird, much closer to federal jury selection. It was not a good jury selection where the lawyers got to dig in. The lawyers didn't ask any questions. So I don't really know much about the jurors.
So you have jurors that already know he's disgraced, you think?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. I think everybody in that town, everybody in that state, everybody in the country knows he's disgraced. Now, whether that's going to make them convict him, I don't know. But I think they knew about him at least slightly. All right, let's get to some questions finally. Keely, take in mind the call log pics of Alex's phones were in September. So many reasons why they could have been gone, too hard to look at and be reminded of daily. Yeah, but Keely, the reason for that is they kind of screwed up the phone grab that they did on 6/10 when he gave them the phone. This expert was like, yeah, it wasn't good enough. So I had to go back and redo it in September. So is that Alex Murdoch's fault? Because on 6/10, just days after the incident, when he was doing that interview, he gave him his phone. So they should have pulled what they needed then, and they didn't. Jennifer Swain, Peter, Nicole just gifted 20 memberships. That's awesome. Nicole's the best. We love Nicole. I wish I could say that was unusual, but she does crazy stuff like that all the time. Thank you, Nicole. Nala's encounters. Did you catch Maggie's text about how she thought something was fishy with Alex? I thought she was saying something was off, like he wasn't healthy, like him and Randolph, something like they weren't healthy. That's how I took it, at least. Just one. If he did do it, what would drive him to murder them after having a moment like this minutes before? What the hell? Yeah. Like these nice, kind moments. I mean, don't you think that could play on the jury? Meaning they think this doesn't make sense. Again, the motive. The motive is the big problem. Bernadette Durkin, I don't think he's allowed to appeal this case. He was using Maggie's phone and he left his phone in the car, so his phone didn't record steps. He can absolutely appeal the case if he loses. Absolutely. Jennifer Swain, what possible reason could Alex have for erasing his text to Maggie? Who knows? John O'Rourke, it hurts the jurors so much to not be able to take notes because the prosecution presentation is so confusing to follow. Numbers, logistics, patterns, steps, blood patterns, thoughts. What's your thought about that the jury can't take notes?
I don't like that they can't take notes. True. However, I thought the prosecution, frankly, did a terrible job. They could clean it up in closing to make it organized, but they should have had a nice chart. They should have had all these timelines all written out. And had this guy say, okay, I'm looking at document exhibit 238, and then point to the chart. This is what 238 shows. So the jurors can see the timeline, all the times, where he was, mix up the text messages with the steps, with the phone, with the all this stuff, so that they would have a timeline that made sense to them, and it was all neatly put together. They could have done that. They could have done that. The rules allow for a summary chart. And the rules allow for a witness to testify from a summary chart. I don't know why they didn't do that who the heck understood, until they do closing, the jurors aren't going to understand what the heck the guy was talking about. They're not going to remember all those numbers and times.
Especially because even the guy's like, yeah, these are out of order. Just because it's saying it's here, it could still be here in the timeline. Yeah, just throw all the crap that doesn't matter out. All of the phone calls and text messages that don't matter. 8:40, this happened. 8:44 was this text. 8:44 were these steps. 8:45 was this video. 8:46 was this Snapchat video. 8:49, the phone locked forever. Alex Murdoch's phone starts walking at 9:02. He calls. Just go right there. All of the
relevant
times.
Absolutely. It would have made so much sense.
So much better. 96 per. He was at the kennel moving around at 8:45, proved by the Snapchat videos, but his phone showed there were no steps from 8 to 9. This proves he didn't have his phone. Okay. So he didn't have his phone. Does that mean he's the murderer? There's still all of these dots to connect that the state's trying to prove little stuff like this, but they've got to actually prove the murder, right? They've got to prove the murder. And he never said he did. He never said he had his phone, right? When did he go see his mom? Why didn't they check the house in Alameda? Now, the state still has days to prove this stuff, and I think they can prove it. And like I said, if they get into the financial crimes, I think they win easily. Dana W., I don't understand what the state's theory is. Are they suggesting that immediately after the Snapchat, he goes to the house, puts on his raincoat, brings two weapons back with him? It seems unlikely to me. Yes, Dana, brings two weapons back, kills him at 8:45, cleans up, gets rid of the clothes, gets rid of the two weapons, all in time to get in his car at 9 o'clock, call Maggie at 902 and 906, make other phone calls, make other plans. They know where his car went. So where did he ditch the weapons? I mean, I just, it's a tough one for me. It's a tough one. Tay Pasternak, there is allegedly evidence that defense has that puts Alex at his front door walking to his vehicle at 906 on the 7th to leave for M's. However, the state claims this is when he threw her phone. Yes, and the state's expert agreed that at that point, those two phones were not together. That's why it's so confusing. Why does the state even try to prove that? Why did they try to prove he took and threw her phone? I guess if they don't prove it, the defense is like, why was her phone a half mile away? So the state's got to have an explanation for everything, I guess, right?
They do.
Mia Bailey, weren't the lights on at the kennel during the video? So random killer turns off the lights after killing them? Unanswerable question for me as I sit here. Don, by him saying he knows Alex Murdaugh, he really doesn't, because if he did, he would know about the financial issues. Okay. Do you, that. Okay. Great point, Don. And I agree with you that you don't really know anybody. That's probably how I'd answer that question. I don't really know anybody, but the fact that they asked him, can you think of any reason Alex Murdaugh did this? And he said, no. Do you think that opened the door to the financial crimes?
I do. If they're putting on, well, I if they're putting on a defense of the motive. Now, wait a minute. Are you talking about this individual witness that knows nothing about finances? No, correct. They can't question him about it. No,
I'm saying,
Hold on, time out. All right.
Do you think that his answer opens the state to be able to bring in other evidence of the financial crimes?
No, it lets them ask the question, do you know about his finances? That's right. A legitimate question. But when he said no, that ends the inquiry about finances. Right. Yes, absolutely. That this individual witness was not the guy to be shooting all these questions about the finance. He was not the right witness.
Jay Scott, isn't AM facing jail time for other crimes anyways? Yes, a lot of it. Tay Pasternak, last but not least, if Rogan knew that Alex was with Paul, then why didn't he call him to get a hold of Paul? I have no idea. I mean, I don't think Rogan knew. Yeah, I guess you're right. Rogan should have known, but Rogan never got the video, right? He never got the video. So maybe he didn't even know Alec was there till later. Amy Parker, do they know for a certainty that these videos were taken at the same time as they were posted? I sometimes wait hours or even days to post something. Ooh, that's a good question. But I think they can tell when the camera turns on and off.
They can tell when the video was shot. They can tell that.
Ashley Ducharme, still thinking not guilty so far. Thoughts? If I had to vote today, absolutely not guilty. I think it's trending towards guilty, though. What do you think?
I think it's too early. I think that we're not seeing the best stuff yet. I think the early stuff, I think the state deliberately did it this way. They're putting the best stuff on as they go on.
Mia Bailey, I think it's important that Chris, his best friend, confronted him that morning. Motive, in my opinion, everything was coming apart. But it doesn't seem like this well-manipulated plan is what would come from like the walls crashing in, but I don't know. Stephanie 1208. I'm not saying I'm convinced he didn't do it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't know what the state's proving. I think it's more likely that he either had help or hired somebody to do it. And a lot of you have said that too. It seems like they've ruled that out, but that's what it feels like to me. Stephanie, didn't the experts say that the phone would have been on an open to change orientation? And we know Alec has Maggie's password because he gave PIN to cops. Honestly, I couldn't tell if the phone had to be on and opened or just the screen lit up. I couldn't tell by the expert. I was kind of confused by that.
I thought it had to be open.
Kesa Dillibar, EDB said that the door was flung open to the financial crimes with the situation for murder question. Natalie Lawyerchick said she didn't think it opened the door. If that opened the door, I think there are 50 things that open the door throughout this. Every time they talk about the BUI case, every time they talk about Alec Murdaugh getting sued, then it opened the door, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're creating motives for other people to want to hurt the Murdaugh family. So then all of those open the door too. So why wasn't it open from the very, very beginning? And if I was the judge, maybe I'd say that. Maybe I'd say, you're talking about BUIs. You're talking about lawsuits. You're talking about people hating Alec Murdaugh. Well, that's all in the same vein as these financial crimes. And if the judge lets it in, then fine. The judge lets it in. I hope that if it comes in, they actually have a connection that Maggie and Paul knew about it and we're going to do something about it. Because if not, then I don't like the fact that it's coming. And frankly, whether or not they open the door, I think it should come in if they can actually prove it for his motive. Just to be clear, like, I think it should come in if they can prove it's his motive. I know I'm getting loud about it because I don't think the door's open. I think those questions at the end of the day were totally inappropriate. But if they can actually prove motive, I think that's fair game and they should come in.
I think hopefully the judge tomorrow will make them show the connection between the financial crimes and the murders. That's what he needs to do before he calls the jury back and puts evidence on.
Janet Moorcraft, can't they do a scientific voice analysis to see if it was Alex's voice? I've never heard that.
If it's a good enough recording, that did sound like a great recording.
I think they did better than that. They called two people that knew these people like family, and they both said with 100% certainty it was Alex Murdoch. So I think that's better than an expert. Mary Claire Rochelieu, isn't it also possible that the video with AM and the tree could be used to confirm match the voice heard at the kennel? There's lots of recording of Alec Murdoch they could match with it. But again, I think they had better evidence than that by calling the people that knew them. Crafting with Amy, I think the defense was leaning toward the gang AM put away could have been coming for him when they did cross on GSR guy. They did ask that, like, really bad gang, horrible gang. It's possible he did have people out to get him. What better way than to do this? Sure. And just think about it, if somebody actually did set Alec Murdoch up and they did hate Alec Murdoch, oof, they're probably loving this trial. Ann Liebman, George, do you think the jury looks at the judge and follows his lead? And this judge can't stand these spoiled kids and criminal father, so he allows the prosecution to give motive.
Well, I hope that's not why the judge is doing it, but you're absolutely right about the judge and the jury. The only person in that courtroom the jury truly trusts is the judge. You know, they know they have a motive with the prosecution. They have a reason to be there. The defense has a reason to be there. But the judge, he's this wonderful neutral guy that's only looking for truth and justice. So he absolutely is the guy they look to.
And they think about that with every judge, basically.
Yes.
Stephanie Coker, what does proffer mean? Can you use the last witness in the prosecution freight train of questions as an example? So sure, a proffer is an offer of proof. And what happens is you go outside the presence of the jury, you put the witness on the stand, you say, okay, prosecution, go ahead and ask him your questions. The prosecutor asks the questions, the defense can even cross, and then the prosecutor can redirect, and then you argue in front of the judge that that testimony we just heard offered for its proof of what they're trying to prove here, we don't think it's admissible, judge. So the judge hears all the testimony, all the questions, all the answers. The judge makes the decision. If the judge allows it, you redo the whole thing in front of the jury. If the judge says no, then you're not allowed to ask any of those questions in front of the jury. Ginny Probs. Also, all my friends gathered at my parents' house, pool, hunting, etc., and loved my parents. When my parents divorced after 26 years, my friends were all surprised. They couldn't speak to issues in my family. Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. You don't really know anybody. You don't really know anybody. Tammy Merrill, the judge threw the prosecution a huge bone because he can see that they don't have a case. That whole ending was dirty and crooked as could be, appalling. Clan Locke, if convicted, can the conviction be overturned by appeal because of using prior bad acts?
Absolutely. Statistically, that's one of the most common reasons to reverse the case.
Exactly. Because they know how damning it is. They know. The appellate court, they usually don't feel bad for criminal defendants, and it's really hard to win a criminal appeal. But if you go throw their history at them that has nothing to do with this case, and they just convict them based on their history, the appellate court does not like that. Kim D, so why is he waiting until the morning so they can prepare their arguments, bring their witnesses in that they need to prove it? Tony D. Cristoforo, now it's a wrap. I can't believe the judge took no control before he made the decision on all that stuff. I agree, Tony. I think it's trending in that direction because of this. Mia Bailey said money is not the only motive. What's the other motive? That she was going to divorce him, I guess. But we haven't heard any of that testimony. Lil Patty, Peter, could this be used as a base for an appeal? Absolutely. Kesa, your dad is so chill and calm. Clearly just a very experienced criminal defense lawyer. I'd feel super safe with him as my counsel. Yes, he is a lot less high strung than I am. And a better criminal defense lawyer. Bernadette Durkin, didn't the older defense guy testify facts the other day?
Well, he can lead.
Yes.
There's a difference. The prosecution is not supposed to ask leading questions. They're not supposed to suggest the answer. But a defense lawyer during cross-examination, he can lead and he can throw facts in there. There's a difference in the way they ask questions.
Lisa Boris, attorneys are so different than the Depp v. Heard case. This seems like amateur hour. I disagree. I think these attorneys are good. Most of them. I think most of these attorneys are good. I think the guy that we first saw today, or the guy that's doing all the tech cross, I think he's good too. I think there are a lot of good attorneys in here, but it's my opinion. Steph Morris, what do you think? You think they're good attorneys that overall?
I think they could have prepared better. The guy that did the tech guy, that's his witness. There should not have been a delay, a question. There shouldn't be fumbling for an exhibit. He knew every question he was going to ask, every answer he was going to get, and he knew when he needed the exhibit. Yet you saw him fumbling and looking for exhibits and flipping through his pages to try to find the next question. That shouldn't happen when it's your witness.
You're talking about the guy that was doing cross-examination?
No, direct.
I'm talking about the guy that did the cross. I'm talking about the guy that did the cross.
Cross was good. But the guy who did the direct examination, no reason in the world he should have been fumbling around when he asked those
A couple questions. Of the prosecutors have struggled. There was something I was just going to say about that too. And now they did demand speedy trial. So this was prepped very quickly, very quickly, only a few months. Steph Morris, love having Papatragos' take on the case. That's what we're here for. If you have questions for him, get him in. We have a lot of questions to get through, so we got to go rapid fire here because hopefully we'll be done in the next 10 or 15 minutes. Lisa Figueroa, so the toothpaste is out of the tube, but now the judge will rule tomorrow on previous bad acts. Lisa, yes, that's as backwards as it sounds, literally. The testimony has already come out, yet the judge is going to rule tomorrow. John O'Rourke, I actually agree with Papa T for the first time ever. Huge issue. Southern Charmer, he got a loan on Edisto House and Maggie wouldn't sign it. Okay. All right. We'll see if that comes out as another motive. Carsto, won't the money theft be a moot point when the jury learns that neither Paul nor Maggie had life insurance, therefore no motive? That's one way to prove motive. Another way is that they knew and they were going to either sell him out or, like Gay said, she wouldn't sign off on something that he needed to sign off on to get the money. So he had to get rid of her so he could get the loan, things like that. Stephanie, so I'm curious, asking witnesses, do you know about finances? How is that different than do you know about A&M and Maggie's relationship? Do you know about it is an okay question. Once he says no, you can't follow up because then they have no foundation for their answer. Or if it's based on hearsay, that's not a proper foundation for their answer. All right, Dad, you take this one. T. Sky, isn't it possible his big plan was to have one last perfect day with his family, then kill Paul, Maggie, and himself, only he chickened out on the suicide?
I have no idea. I mean, that, you know, that certainly is a possibility, but I don't know if there's any evidence of that.
Maria C. Oliva, if the defense did not object during questioning, can they present that in their appeal? So let me give context, Ed. You answer this, but let me give context. They have, before the trial, objected to it and told them not to do it. Before this happened at a break, they had a whole discussion. The judge said, I'm going to hear the question first. And then eventually they did object during the line of questioning. The judge overruled it. So do you think that that is enough protection for appeal?
They preserved the appeal for what they did object to, but they didn't object to those first couple questions. And I think they did not preserve the appeal for that.
I disagree 100%. I think based on the fact that they've already said that they don't think any of this should come in, it's totally improper, and the judge let it come in, I don't think they've lost their chance.
If when they actually happened and they didn't object to it, I think they may have waived it.
Okay, we can agree to disagree on that one. Emily, so scared PC doesn't have more and now risk appeal. We will see. Southern Charmer, Snapchat wearing different, others not found. I think she means different clothes. Yeah, I think that was a big point that happened today. Terry, could he have feel like murdering them was his only choice to save himself? The cops certainly didn't do their best on this investigation. Yeah. What do you think about the investigation on this case?
It was pretty poor.
Yeah, it would have been a dream to tear apart.
It was just awful. These were so rookies. And yet they call them? SLED? Is that what the South Carolina guys are called?
South Carolina law enforcement.
Yeah. You know, SLED are supposed to be the premier law enforcement agency in the state, and they don't wear booties when they're walking around a crime scene.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, they don't check out the footprints. That was a terrible investigation.
Tay Pasternak said Rogan knew because the phone call prior to the video. He didn't say that he heard Alex's voice during the phone call, just on the video. What was Buster's alibi? Kristen Bird said, I don't know, but my guess is they couldn't like put him around the house at the time like they could for Alec. So that's why they went with Alec over Buster. Tori, Alice chart like number 15 on DB trial. Yes. Yes. A chart like that. Give the jury a timeline to follow. The evidence so far is so confusing. Love Papa Tragos. Thanks again for the lives, Peter. I love being able to be here. I'm glad you're here too, Tori. And I'm glad these work in your schedule. Yeah. Like that chart was great. And they used, you saw how much they used it during the Daryl Brooks trial. They needed something like that here. My kid's personal Uber driver. Still thinking we're leaning towards a hung jury, but I think the family is getting answers and no, he's going to jail anyway. Just my opinion. Love your view. Yeah, I mean, I think a hung jury is possible in a case like this. Hondo Roque, could Alex have given his dog the chicken to distract his wife and son, and then they would be running around chasing the dog? There's a lot of plausible explanations, but the state has to actually prove what happened. Lauren L., pretty sure the state clarified the phone was thrown later. I didn't pick it up. Maybe they did.
That's the way I got it. It was thrown.
What do you mean thrown late? It was not thrown at 9:06.
Right. It wasn't thrown at the same time as his. In other words, the phones were two different places.
Correct.
They were disposed of at different times.
His phone was not disposed of.
Well, it was not together. I guess that's what they were saying. The phones weren't together.
Meaning Alec Murdaugh's phone and Maggie Murdaugh's phone.
Right.
So in order to say that, so they're making this big deal about the orientation change, but when he threw it, the orientation wouldn't have changed.
Right. Unless it was spun or he has an explanation about it.
Which is like so dumb. Like that, yeah. To me, that's dumb. Right. Like that's hogwash.
Well, I'm sure they're going to have an expert.
Paula Street. He said he wasn't at the kennel. He was. I agree. Major lie. Big point. And the defense seems like they can brush it off. Like, you don't tell the cops everything. Come on. It's okay to lie to the cops. Jennifer Johnson. Have dad watch Rogan's last few questions. That is what supposedly opened the door. Rogan's last few questions. I don't know. We watched some of Rogan's already about how he didn't know or didn't know any reason why. I think that's what you're talking about. Author April Baker. Do you think the defense is asking the witnesses, do you know why he would have committed these crimes? Open the door to questions on motive. The state can't open their own door. Oh, you're saying why he would have committed these crimes in the murders. Yeah, we talked about that. And yeah. that I don't think on its own it does. The totality of there's no motive gets us going in that direction. But the state hasn't shown how this connects to motive yet, in my opinion. And I watched that hearing and I don't remember them talking about, you know, Maggie not signing off on something or Maggie and Paul were going to the cops about the financial problems. I don't remember any of that from that hearing. Azam, let's get to 3K likes and I'll give another membership. Azam, people just giving out memberships. Let's get to, we have 8,500 people in here. This is our biggest Alec Murdaugh live chat of the trial on day 8. So yeah, hit that like button. We should be able to get to 3,000, 5,000, 7,000 likes. Marty Acop, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We're going to continue to do these kind of breakdowns every night. I'll bring my dad on again later in the week or next week to talk more about this case. Marty Acop, how about the defense's question? Is there any distances that Alex would commit a crime? I do not remember this question. Jojo, I'm eagerly awaiting to see what defense tech expert says. I think they're going to have all kinds of experts, don't you?
Tons. And we know from our cases, Peter, that these, where they say he's here and he had these steps and all that stuff, those are not exact. We know that even Google admits that there is a margin of error in all this stuff. I mean, you know, an example, I don't know if you do it. You play golf. Well, it counts your steps, but also counts your swings. And so you actually look like you had more steps than you had. So yeah, their experts are going to be able to put some holes in this.
Yeah. I've never counted my steps, but even the state expert said it's inexact. Even the state expert. Cake or death. He stole nearly $9 million and they had to sell a house. A spouse isn't going to shrug that off. Plus Paul landed them all in legal trouble. I get it, but I mean, I don't know. Lita Slavich. He inherited all of her property. Okay. Terry Labeth. What about the birthday video with the law partner there? That was part of the door wide open, but why? Confused. Yeah, people were saying like, because the guy that knows about the financial crimes was in a video, that opens the door. No, it doesn't. Just the fact that he was in some video that they played does not open the door to financial crimes, in my opinion.
And who played the video?
Mentioned that already.
Who played the video?
The defense actually played that birthday video they did, which I wouldn't have done. I would not have done that, but I still don't think it opened the door. Nahlis Encounters. Did they do fingerprinting on the doors and rule out strangers' prints at all? We haven't heard about that, but we have heard a lot of other things they've done that did not rule out the prints, like with the footprints and things like that. Mr. Perfect, these bad prosecutors in all these trials are making bad law that could hurt all of us in the future. The ending questions were being bad lawyers. Mr. Perfect, I agree. They should not. I don't agree with the whole sentiment, but those last questions, I think you would not want that to happen to somebody you knew or loved. That we all have people in our lives that we know and love that have done bad things in the past. We don't want that to mean that every time they get accused of anything in the future, because they did all that other stuff, they're going to get convicted. That's just not how the system works. Lisa Wilson, Maggie dead, AM gets her house and maybe life insurance. Paul dead, no legal expenses for boat accident. Maggie's parents are still available. Maggie has kids. Maggie and Paul owned everything together, I thought. I mean, not Paul, Alex. I thought Alex was the rich one. I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong, but they maybe both could be, you know, from this area. But I don't know. Here's the point. We'll see if the state can prove that. Post-woke world. I've been a juror on a murder trial. If I sat on this trial, I'd be so frustrated with the prosecution right now. Could Blanca have assisted Alex, the housekeeper? I have no idea. They haven't put any evidence on of that. Hey, Heather, I'm from the area of South Carolina and not a fan of Alex, but nothing presented so far says guilty beyond a reasonable doubt to me. Jennifer Landers, did the push for this to be tried in 6 months affect their preparation? Why don't you talk about prepping for a speedy trial? And how about this, actually? I really want to get through these, but what do you know about, or what do you think about the strategy of demanding speedy trial on this case, which I think was Alec Murdoch's best chance to win, to get this tried before the financial crimes?
I think it was a great, great strategy. I think that they were absolutely correct in demanding a speedy trial. They, number one, and it's obvious, Alex is spending a lot of money on his defense. So they had all the resources they needed to get prepared for this trial. They wouldn't have had the bad publicity from the fraud trials, because, you know, those would have been in the press and they would have had a lot of publicity for that. Absolutely the best thing to do, try this case first, get it out of the way. And frankly, from what we hear, you have the best chance of winning this case than you did of winning the fraud cases. Absolutely the right decision.
He's cooked on the financial cases from everything I've read and seen. I don't think it's going to go well for him.
Me too.
And then the other thing I heard is that they're waiting for him to get charged federally, and they're going to go plead him out federally. Why would they do that?
What's the federal charge? You know what the federal
charge
is?
Some kind of wire fraud, bank fraud, whatever, stuff like that. Fraud charges.
Well, unless there's some exceptional circumstance, there's a declination policy the feds have that if someone is tried in state court, convicted in state court, goes to state prison, they normally, unless they have some special circumstance, don't also charge him federally, because it's just a waste of resources. So there have to be some reason that they're going to do it.
I meant if they win this case, if they win the murder case, instead of going and trying all the state fraud financial charges, if they charge him federally, which I've heard rumblings of, that they might just go plead him there, because people would usually rather go to federal prison in Alec Murdoch's situation.
If he's charged with murder and convicted of murder in state court.
No. I said if they win the murder case.
Oh, by they, you meant the defense. I'm sorry.
Correct. If he wins the murder case, then we've botched this whole conversation. My point is, if you're going to go to prison for financial crimes, you'd rather go to federal prison than state prison.
Yes. Yes, I think especially in South Carolina. Yes.
Yes, correct. Can the defense say that the financial crimes are motive for the family to be murdered? If so, how can they argue? What do you think? How can they flip it? So, like, they're saying, yes, we stole money from a lot of people, but flip it as motive that somebody else would have killed him.
Right. Somebody else, you talked about this gang, I guess he prosecuted, you know, maybe a lot of other people wanted to kill him too. Maybe he had a lot of enemies, but they're going to have to prove that. They're going to not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, but they're going to have to present some reasonable evidence during this trial that someone else did the murder, if that's going to be their theory.
Maisla, why would the prosecution set it up for appeal? So my dad broke this down right early on. You got to win first. So if you risk appeal, sometimes the prosecutor, that's okay, because if you lose, you can't ever try again. But right now, you have to appeal. I'm sorry, you have to win. So, you know, risking that, sometimes prosecutors think it's okay. I don't. Ladybug 999, he set up his own murder with a cousin for money, tried to get someone else to take the blame for the BUI. So far-fetched, he could plan M&P's. The stories for Alec Murdoch are the most unbelievable story centered around one person I've ever heard. Going to his housekeeper who died, and he talked to her kids into suing himself and taking the money and stealing from. I mean, this guy is a scumbag. He's going to get what he deserves. I just don't know if they've proved he's murdered his wife and kid. That's all I'm saying. I've said from the jump, and I started out probably thinking less and worse of him than any criminal defendant in any case we've covered on YouTube. but we still have to look at what are they proving in this case. Did the defense not object to the money questions to ensure an appealable issue? They did object to some, but not all of them. They did not object to every single one. Zimena, with what has been presented so far, do you think there is enough ground for conviction without reasonable doubt as we sit here right now, Dad? What do you think?
No, no, they wouldn't. Right now, there's not enough. They need to present a lot more. There is not enough for conviction right now. And the other thing, too, when you were talking before about Speedy Trial, all this and him, he's a personal embarrassment to any lawyers around to see this guy. I mean, I'm ashamed of this guy.
Yeah.
But and he shouldn't be convicted of murder unless he did it, obviously.
Right. And his lawyer said, oh, we're so honored to represent him. A lot of people said they should not have said that. Yeah. Debbie Joe A., I think he would rather wipe out his family than be disgraced. He went there to kill them and then himself, but chickened out, hired his killer later. Kyrie T. Eliason, I'm glad you are covering this. I can't watch it. Lost a brother at 14 who looked just like Paul and was shot by his best friend in 2016 with a 12 gauge. It's too hard to watch. Appreciate your coverage. Yeah, Kyrie, that's terrible. I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, and you can just see how brutal it is for Paul's friends to get on the stand and testify about this. It's their voices cracked. Rogan's voice cracked when he said he heard Alex's voice on there because he seems to love the guy and he seems to think he didn't do it. And I mean, it's just really, really sad. P-Hop, over 8,000 in here. Hit that like button. Yes, P-Hop. Thank you. I'm glad you figured out how to do the Snapchats or the Super Chats again. Just Tame, orientation only changes when the screen is turned on. So like the phone is unlocked and open. That's what we're saying. Not just the light is on and you're looking at it. Okay. Lucia, do you recommend working at the public defender's office out of law school? I'm a 3L and want to pursue a career in criminal law. I'll give you my dad. Actually, why don't you give yours on what you think is better? Cause I think mine will be the same as yours. So go ahead.
It depends on what you want to do with your life. If you want to be a trial lawyer and if you want to do criminal, you should do the public defender's office or the state prosecutor's office. You'll get more trials there in 3 or 4 years than you'll get in 10 years out in private practice. However, you have to realize that when you're there with the pay scales, unfortunately, they're just not able to keep up with the pay scales. Financially, you're better off going with a law firm probably than you are with them. But personally, I went with the state attorney's office for 3 years, 4 years, 4 years before I went out in private practice. And I wouldn't trade that for the world. It was a great experience and I loved every minute of it.
I think that if you're going to do this, you should try to go to the state attorney's office if you want to be a criminal defense lawyer because you learn what the other side is like and then you go out on your own and be a criminal defense lawyer. I think it's better to go to the state than the public defender's office if your long-term goal is to be a private defense attorney. If your long-term goal is to be a public defender, then obviously, yes, go right to the public defender's office right out of law school. Wolfie's Angels, even if they prove he was there, they still need to prove he held the gun and killed him. Yes, proving he's there is not enough. Proving he lied about something is not enough. Proving he committed financial crimes is not enough. Kim Ripley, I'm surprised they aren't calling her parents since they made a point to say they specifically asked if AM did it, I think is what you meant. Yeah, we'll see. They could still call the parents, but I can't believe they didn't search the parents' house. That's what I can't believe. Azam, thanks for the super sticker. Lauren Ellie, is Wilson on the witness list? If so, can he open the door? The state cannot call a witness to open the door. The state cannot do that. I think he is on the witness list, and I think the judge is just going to let him use it as motive, so there doesn't need to be a door open. Let's remember that, too. There doesn't need to be a door open if the evidence is already admissible to prove motive. So let's remember that. Bevstar Canuck, did Paul's criminal trial regarding the boat and Alec being sued over it disappear with Paul's death? Motive. So no, Alec can still be sued even though Paul's dead, but the criminal case against Paul obviously goes away. Meg Magruder, question. What about the last few questions of Rogan by DH? First friend that was on the stand at lunch. DA asked, do you know why AM would kill the family? Yeah. I mean, potentially it opened it up. They've been arguing the whole time that there's no motive. So potentially it could have opened the door. I don't think it did. Ann Boswell, he's involved in selling drugs. Definitely buying them. I don't know if they have proof that he was also selling them. I could be wrong. Peter, please remember father knows best. I see where you get your good looks from Papa. Thank you, American lady. John O'Rourke, nothing is better than Papa T and little T discussions. Well, thank you. I'm glad somebody thinks so, John. Melissa S., if someone else did this, wouldn't Alex have seen slash heard something now that we know he was at the kennel? Potentially, but also, Dad, what do you think about this? People are saying, like, why hasn't the family come out and said, well, we need to get the real killer, giving information about who actually did this? It seems like they may all just think Alec Murdoch did this.
You know, they might, but the case is not over. I mean, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And tell you another thing, too, is what people have been talking about here. Alex might testify. You know, we don't know that. I don't think so either. I wouldn't.
He's got all those other charges. They're going to ask about all that other stuff.
But, you know, but if it all comes in and the Williams rule comes in and he plans on pleading guilty anyway on the charges, you know, this is, you know, murder is murder. I mean, the punishment for murder is life without parole.
He stole so much money, he's getting life anyway.
You think so?
He's getting life no matter what.
Gee, I've had a client steal that much money, didn't get life.
Not with 100 charges. He has literally 100 criminal charges against him. Yeah, when you get, I mean, even if it's 1 year per charge, you're cooked. Thank you for the super sticker, Tule Mum. Roxanna Rousseau, during initial investigation of the murders, could the cops' sled have been protecting AM or be scared to go against him? And could the state use that as an excuse for the botched investigation in their argument somehow? What do you think? Is the state going to use that as their, that would be a horrible argument for the state.
They would have to now, because the state is not going to say that SLED didn't do a good job. They're not going to admit this was a botched investigation.
Yeah.
That would just be hurting their own case.
I agree. Mama Bear, how do they get past him in the Snapchat video minutes before the murders? That he left and then the murders occurred. Hmm. I mean, the state's the one that's got to prove he committed the murders, right? And he's saying he went to his mom's house. My kid's personal Uber driver, currently looking for a criminal defense lawyer. I've been told it's better to hire one if we can, instead of using a PD. It's wild charges, thoughts. I mean, I think if you can hire a criminal defense lawyer, you should hire the best one that you can.
PDs are good, but the problem with PDs is the volume. You know, they're so overworked. They really don't have the time. A private lawyer normally should have the time to really work your case and do a good job.
Yeah, I would say hire the best lawyer you can. PD's office, you can get a good lawyer, you can get a bad lawyer. You can hire a good private lawyer, you can hire a bad private lawyer. I would always say go interview, figure out, and pick the best lawyer you can afford. And if you can't afford a lawyer that you think is great, then go with the PD's office. Stephen Carachet, love the analysis. Here's tip money for your next round on the greens. Thank you, Stephen. Heather Forder, I have family near the area. Everyone knows who he is and what he's done. Kim Ripley, the whole thing about the portrait seems so stupid. I hold my phone by the ring and spin it around all the time, even when it's on my hand and I'm walking around. I agree, and I think the state just shouldn't have made a big deal about it, in my opinion. The state should not have made a big deal about it. KWN Upstate, many family killers did the deed when their life fell apart. Do you need motive when the situation has happened many times, similar circumstances? No. Modem, you do not have to prove motive. You do not. Not an essential element. All right, I'm going to fly through these last few because I am dead tired. We live in South Carolina, and my cousins from Jennifer have been on the Murdaugh's boat in Beaufort, and she was
Beaufort,
and she was by with the girl that died. Oh, she was friends with the girl that died. Man, that was a horribly sad story, that BUI accident. Ann Lieberman, let's let Peter go to bed. Good night, all, before his wife murders him. Yes, very soon I'll go to bed, very soon. Marty Acob, sorry, my message earlier was about the defense asking the first friend if he could think of any circumstance that AM would commit the crime. Right, I think we got there, Marty. Yeah, and I mean, my dad thinks it could open the door. I think it could have. I don't think it did. So we'll see what ends up happening. Z Martin, thank you so much for the super sticker. Dad, thank you so much for joining. We'll have to get
always
you back
enjoy
on.
Enjoy it.
Get more thoughts. We've got a couple more super stickers I'm going to get through. Why don't you just tell me this? As we sit here, what do you think is going to happen over the next couple of days? What do you expect the prosecution to do? You think they have some of their best stuff? Where do you think we'll be feeling by the time Friday comes and goes?
Well, when they rest, I think we'll think that he's probably guilty and he's, you know, going to get convicted when they rest. That's before we've heard the defense case. I think the defense case, I've heard that they have a lot of witnesses on their witness list. We don't know what they're going to put on, and some of their best stuff, the state's best stuff, is the technical stuff. And if they can really destroy the technical stuff, then that's going to kill their case.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to think he's guilty at the end of the state's case, but the defense could, and I expect them to put on a case in chief And I think they could change some minds. I really think they could change some minds. Thank you, Julie and Rockin' Dockin', South Carolina. That's all we've got tonight. We will go out with Rachel Wiley. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Hit that like button on your way out and make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. This is the longest one I've done in a long time. I like to keep them to an hour. So how it got to an hour and 45 minutes is beyond me. We can't let that happen again because it's just too long and I'm too tired. Dad, thanks so much for joining me. I will see you tomorrow.
See you.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law, and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.